Hello, everybody. Nothing like making an entrance, is it? Thank you so much for your good humour in allowing your MC to run in the door at the last minute. So I started my World Mental Health Day this morning in Monto, which is a tiny little community in the North Burnett. I was there last night at their dinner, which was lovely. So I started this morning at sunrise, dodged a few kangaroos on the road while I drove to Rocky, got there to find my plane delayed, emailed Dillis, so sorry, but I'm sure I'll make it. We were then delayed further, and then we had an aborted landing. So it's been a really interesting morning. I've taken a few deep breaths for World Mental Health Day in the taxi, but it's really lovely to be here, and I'm really pleased that I have been able to make it. So may I first start, please, by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today, the Turrbal people, pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. And also to acknowledge anyone in the room who has a lived experience of mental illness or lived experience of suicide as well. So it is, as I say, a really great pleasure to be here. And I know you've already heard very briefly from Dillis, but I would like to welcome Dillis back to the microphone to open the proceedings for the day. It's just from what I've learnt of the Windsor Group already, and I don't know a lot, but I'm looking forward to learning more, but definitely to be congratulated for their commitment to their social enterprise project and to, you know, the ongoing capacity and development of people and organisations. So welcome back to the stage.
Thank you, Bronwyn. Thank you. And once again, thank you very much for everyone for attending here this afternoon. For those of you that don't know much about Windsor Group, Recruitment was our old name, Windsor Group. We have, over the last number of years, put on initiatives such as this to the extent that we actually are accredited as a social enterprise. In the last financial year, we delivered 22 of such events with 909 places for people. We had just under 800 people attend, representing 245 organisations. So it's from that work that we are now an accredited social enterprise. So it's very exciting for us. This event is especially important to Windsor and our Windsor team. So we take this one very seriously. This is the third of these such events, and we will continue to do this. And I'm very excited that we have been very fortunate to have the panel that we have here today. So Jane Gardner from Lendlease is here to recap on what she started last year. We've got Ivan Frukovic, the Queensland Mental Health Commissioner, and we also have Patrice O'Brien from Beyond Blue, and for the first time we've been able to attract someone from Beyond Blue, so I'm really delighted that we can welcome you here today. And of course Bronwyn, who is the CEO of Roses in the Ocean. So thank you very much indeed for agreeing to participate here. So I'm not sure that there's that work-life balance anymore. I think these days it's more about integrating many aspects of our lives to achieve what is best for each of us. But nevertheless, for the people that spend large amounts of their time within the workplace, it's vital that as employers, we take responsibility and we have a duty of care and to find solutions that will fit the situations that we're presented with, and to purposefully help restore all individuals in our own spheres to an acceptable standard of health, joy and well-being. The specialists here today will provide us with evidence-based advice and practical tools to take away that we can use to formulate kind and practical solutions into our workplaces. So it is my pleasure to formally introduce our MC, Bronwyn Edwards, and I'm so pleased you could make it, Bronwyn, that the charity arrived on time. Bronwyn is a wonderful facilitator, and I can say that because I've seen her performing, and you perform so well, so whose passion for mental health has prompted Bronwyn to join us here today. And she will ensure that our forum runs smoothly and effectively as anyone could wish for. So Bronwyn, as I mentioned before, is the CEO and founder of Roses in the Ocean, a lead organisation for lived experience, which exists to save lives and reduce emotional pain by informing, influencing and enhancing suicide prevention through supporting organisations to effectively and meaningfully engage lived experience expertise. Bronwyn has been a key advocate and driving force for the inclusion of lived experience in all aspects of suicide prevention for many years. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Bronwyn back to the stage. Thank you.
All right, so now I need to just ask you, did you have time to let people know the format of today? No. Okay, lovely. So we have three wonderful guest speakers for you today. Each of them will present to you, and then we'll actually break for about 5 minutes for you to have a bit of a chat amongst yourselves and come up with some questions that you'd like to pose to our guest speakers for the panel Q&A. So first of all, I would really like to give a very warm welcome to Jane Gardner from Lendlease. Jane is the Group Program Manager of Health and Wellbeing at Lendlease. She's a very accomplished health and safety and wellbeing professional, and she has the responsibility of she's responsible for the development and implementation of Lendlease's health and wellbeing global strategy. So no small task. She has a demonstrated history of working in the construction industry. She is skilled in ISO 14001. Now, this was something I was meant to ask, whether that's how I'm supposed to say that.
Okay. I am accredited in that, but that's not the
too many. All right. She has an extensive background, shall I just say, in health and safety, workplace wellbeing, workplace safety, risk assessment, mental health first aid, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to the stage to hear of the wonderful work that you're doing within Lendlease.
I'd like to firstly thank the Windsor Group as well for hosting this event on World Mental Health Day. It's such an important topic for everyone here today, and I'd like to also thank you all for having me here today. As Bronwyn said, my name is Jane Gardner and I'm the Global Health and Wellbeing Manager at Lendlease. So today I'm just going to give you a presentation on the overview about Lendlease, so just giving you a little bit of history about Lendlease, what we do, how we care for our people, and then I'll take you through our mental health approach and our outcomes. So who are we and what do we do? So Lendlease's company vision is to create the best places, and we do this by delivering innovative and sustainable property and infrastructure solutions for future generations to enjoy. Our core capabilities are in development, construction and investment. At Lendlease, we build healthcare facilities, highways, bridges, tunnels, train lines, commercial buildings, shopping centres, residential communities, parklands, senior living and urban city developments. So basically, we're involved in anything in the built environment. So where do we operate? Our global headquarters are in Sydney at Barangaroo. If anyone's had a chance to visit Barangaroo, it's a fabulous building and it showcases a lot of our health and wellbeing initiatives that we've designed and delivered in there. Our operations span across Australia, the Americas, Asia and Europe. We have approximately 13,000 employees and around 780 active projects and managed assets in operation. We operate in 15 cities across 8 countries around the world. And we not only focus on caring for our employees and subcontractors, but we extend this to our customers and our communities wherever we operate. In 2014, Lendlease created a health and wellbeing framework and strategy, which was endorsed by our global leadership team. The framework and strategy was developed after our baseline health assessment and gap analysis of all our processes was completed. As a result, our framework has been designed to allow us to care for our people. We have four key areas strategically aligned to address our health and wellbeing. So the four areas are supporting healthier minds, which helps our people with managing stress, building personal resilience and encouraging healthier behaviours. We're developing healthier bodies, which helps to manage lifestyles and risk behaviours, medical conditions and health management. Building healthier places, offering a safe and healthy work environment, and creating healthier cultures, supporting healthy leadership, providing health benefits and services and social support at every level of the company. The framework and strategy is proven to be a robust and effective tool for us to allow to deliver and focus on our objectives for our people. We were also recently awarded the winner of the multinational category of the Global Healthy Workplaces earlier this month, which is a fantastic result for Lendlease. We know that society faces a number of challenges, and we know that physical and mental health is a growing concern in society. So here are some alarming statistics. Depression is on the rise. More than 300 million people across the world will suffer from depression, and it's the leading cause of disability worldwide. In our industry, construction workers are 6 times more likely to die by suicide than a workplace accident. And physical inactivity, obesity, and tobacco use are some of the biggest killers in the world today. We spend over a third of our lives at work, so it is essential we care for our people's health, safety, and wellbeing. And our workers are not immune to this either. Our last survey in 2017 showed these statistics. So around 20% or 1 in 5 of our employees were identified with some level of stress, anxiety or depression. 49.2% of our people do not consume the right amount of fruit or vegetables per day. 43% of our people surveyed sleep less than the recommended 7 to 9 hours per night. And 31% of our people surveyed are using screens for more than 10 hours each day. And 1 in 3 of our people surveyed self-rated their health as average to poor. So these statistics alone warranted commitment from our leadership team to the health and wellbeing, and in particular into mental health. So as part of our Supporting Healthier Minds pillar, we established a global mental health peer group, which consisted of representation across the organisation. Our results from our baseline health assessment of our global operations identified the need to develop and implement a consistent global mental health approach. The approach supported our vision of creating the best places and underpinned our health and wellbeing framework. Our main objective was to create a better future for people, and that includes actively caring for our people's physical and mental health as well as their safety. So as part of our global approach, we established Mental Health Spectrum to ensure that we focus on all areas of mental health. So someone who has a mental health condition can sit with any part of the spectrum at any time. So we wanted to make sure that we could support and care for people at all times. Our mental health approach covers education and awareness, prevention and early intervention, active intervention and support, and recovery and maintenance. Each of these areas provides a what to do section and suggestions for assistance. Under each area, the suggestions that we provide have been strategically aligned and ensure that our programs cover all areas of our business and all employee types. Some of the programs that we offer under this framework are mental health first aid for all our employees. We offer mental health first aid for the aging, which supports our retirement living business. We have frontline leader training, which incorporates mental health as a topic. We partner with Mates in Construction and offer the Assist, Suicide Prevention and Connector training. We offer the grief counselling, which is training that supports our people in dealing with grief, and again, widely used by our retirement living business when they're dealing with loss of a resident or a loved one. We provide information to our people with links to sites such as Beyond Blue, the Heads Up campaign, which provides great tips and tools on how to create a better mental health in the workplace. We offer a program called Uprise, which is online videos and telephonic coaching, and they focus on stress management, mindfulness, retraining your thinking and work-life balance. We have EAP providers in every country that we operate, and we utilise their offerings as well. Most of them offer lunch and learns and things like that. We offer mindfulness, sleep fit training, resilience training, and a whole lot more. But most importantly, we've partnered with our injury management team. So anyone that has a work-related or non-work-related mental health issue is supported and assisted back into the work with the guidance of our injury management team. But we know that all the programs don't work alone. So our health and wellbeing framework provides a holistic solution. Oh, sorry, can you hear me? Sorry. Where am I up to now? A holistic solution to assist our people. We know that caring for your mental health or your self-care encompasses things like sleeping well, eating better, moving more, and feeling supported. All of these things cross over within our framework, and we believe you can't have one without the other. So since the endorsement of our strategy, we've accomplished the following mental health achievements. So we have over 1,631 employees globally that have participated in at least one mental health program. We have over 1,130 mental health first aiders trained in the UK, Singapore, Australia, Malaysia, and the US. We have 60% of our work sites that have an appointed mental health first aid officer ready to support colleagues and the wider community. We offer wellbeing leave, a global initiative that was launched in August 2015, where our people can take an additional 3 days per year to rest and recover. In 2015, mental health was included as part of our global minimum requirements, our GMRs, which is our safety management system. And the aim of this GMR was to identify any situation where our people may be subject to undue physical or psychological pressures, particularly as a result of excessive working hours. The GMR focuses on our having employee assistance program offered at all of our locations, mental health first aiders trained to identify likely signs of poor mental health in colleagues, suppliers, and anyone who can intervene and help individuals access available support services. Our success with our mental health approach has transformed the way Lendlease approaches mental health. We recently undertook a social return on investment, and this study provided us insights into how effective the framework is delivering value to our employees. And we focused on the minds and bodies pillars only. The outcome of the study showed that 64% of our people who participated in a mental health program felt that they were more able to confront with a mental health issue. And you can see on the slide there a comment from one of our employees saying that the mental health first aid course has been groundbreaking to destigmatise mental health. And in an organisation full of construction workers, that's pretty impressive for us. So we're very, very impressed with those results. The results from our social return on investment also told us that our mental health offerings provide far greater impact than our physical health offerings. And so our office-based people are also benefiting more from these programs than our site-based people. So what are we going to do about that? So we're focusing on creating and completing a health and wellbeing roadshow for FY19, where we go out and talk to all of our people, including all our site-based people, to help inform our next version of the strategy and to increase our site-based participation. Each of our four pillars has a refreshed area of focus for FY19, but in particular under supporting healthier minds, we'll remain diligent with providing mental health support and provide targeted mental health programs. As our data is telling us, Lendlease employees are asking for more support as they are operating under some level of stress. This means we will continue to offer mental health first aid at all our workplaces. We're going to roll out mental health first aid for leaders, a new 90-minute program that we've worked with Mental Health First Aid Australia with. We'll continue to grow our mental health first aid network. We're at 60% compliance now. We want to reach 100% on that. We will continue to promote and communicate mental health campaigns and identify any global opportunities. And we know we can't do this alone, so we've established strong partnerships. We've invested in solid relationships with our external partners who supply the expertise that enable us to deliver our culture of care. We are such a large and diverse company that we need to use a number of partners to help achieve our goal. We predominantly use mental health first aid for our office-based people, Mates in Construction for our site-based people, and we promote a number of organisations like Beyond Blue, Movember and Are You OK Day. And our CEO was one of the ambassadors for the Beyond Blue Heads Up campaign in 2015. Having the right partner for our people is definitely one of the key success factors. And in closing, I'd like to finish by saying Lendlease actively cares for its people and by putting their health, safety and wellbeing first. But by no means do we believe that we have all of this covered, and we'll continue to work with our partners to look at our data and speak to our people to ensure we can do the best we can for them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jane. It is absolutely wonderful to hear the breadth and depth of what you have achieved globally. And the things that really stood out to me through what you were talking about was the absolute holistic approach to what you're doing, and the fact that your mental health and wellbeing, it's really focused on wellbeing. You know, so often we're focusing at the pointy end when people are already under stress. But so much of what you're doing is preempting that and putting, shining the light on those really basic fundamental things that aren't hard to get right, but we often let them go because we're busy. And so that's just wonderful. I congratulate you on such an amazing initiative. I'm now going to introduce you to Ivan Fokovic. He is our Queensland Mental Health Commissioner. I have the absolute pleasure of crossing paths with Ivan and working alongside him quite frequently with our work in the suicide prevention sector. And Ivan is absolutely a wonderful breath of fresh air. There is an urgency about what he wants to do, and he's very, very focused on what we need to do and what we need to innovate. In his prior lives before being the commissioner, he has been the state manager and deputy CEO of the national operations at Aftercare, and was also the director of community mental health branch at the Department of Communities. So can I please welcome Ivan Fokovic.
Thank you very much, and great to be here. I don't have a slideshow. I'm going to talk about some issues. I'm going to try and be the glue between the two presentations. I think Jane and Patrice are going to talk specifically around some of the examples that are happening in the workplace. I'm going to focus around the glue in all of this and how we're trying to shift the system in terms of moving in a particular way to be able to support people that have a mental illness and people that you as employers can refer to and get assistance with, but also how we're trying to move the system beyond, as I think Bronwyn just said, beyond the treatment system and looking at how do you promote wellness. And I think workplace is one of those contexts, but other contexts we're trying to push as well, which also have an impact on the workplace. In fact, the workplace has an impact on those individuals. So I think it's about sort of giving you a bit of a journey around that. But can I start first by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land that we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging? Can I also thank Dillis and particularly the Windsor Group, and generally I think the sort of the private sector, the industry sector, for taking mental health on in such a serious way, as you can see Lendlease and others, Windsor Group, etc. Mental health in the workplace is a priority and a critical area if we're going to really tackle, you know, the rates, the prevalence of mental illness in this country. As I think has been said, we spend more than a third of our life, probably half of our life, at work. And if you think about one in five at some point in our life will experience, in fact, one in five in any 1 year, but one in two in a lifetime will experience some sort of mental health problems, whether that's at the more mild or at the severe level. Talking about the economic impact of that as well is around, at the moment we know that mental health costs this country about, both direct and indirect costs, around $70 billion annually. $70 billion annually. And I think if we can, that's about 4% of the GDP. So you can see how much of an issue this is. And as you're probably, some of you may be aware, most people may be aware, that, you know, the federal government has just announced a Productivity Commission inquiry into mental health, and it's really about the cost of mental health in this country. We're just still waiting for the terms of reference for the inquiry, but that will give us a lot more information around how much mental health costs this country and where do we need to go in terms of our future investment. Can I start by saying, and I'm not going to go into the details around the workplace, but just to give you a bit of an idea, because I think as employers or employees, you need to understand to some degree where we're going with mental health, both in Queensland but also nationally. Now, having been in the sector for a long time, I'm certainly, you know, pleasantly surprised every day about how far we have moved, but that also, I have some major concerns about some of the areas that we're still not making some very good gains in. You know, I remember as a student, my first placement was at Walton Park Hospital. Now, people may remember that out towards Ipswich. But we had three of those large psychiatric institutions, one in Bailey Henderson in Toowoomba, one at Wacol, and we had one at Charters Towers. That's where we used to, and I'll use the word deliberately, dump people with the mental illness. That's what we provided as our treatment. And in fact, I remember doing a field placement out there. So we have moved the system a long way. And I can tell you, when I was at Waltham Park Hospital, mental health in the workplace wasn't even close to being discussed. So we have moved a long way. So, I mean, we always got to think about how much gain we've made. The discourse around mental health, for example, just now, is phenomenally different than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. The discourse now, particularly around the high prevalence disorders, I have to say, is phenomenal. So things like anxiety and depression, I think we're more accepting as a society, we're more accepting in terms of talking about it, and people like Beyond Blue and, you know, Headspace and a whole range of these national initiatives have actually changed some of the perceptions and views about, you know, seeking help when you do experience things like particularly anxiety and depression. But can I tell you, and when you talk to people with lived experience who experience particularly the more chronic illnesses such as schizophrenia, bipolar, it's still not in my backyard. So I think we've got a long way to go in terms of really, you know, greater acceptance. And I can tell you, having been an employer but also a colleague of people who've, you know, living with mental illness, it wasn't an issue at any point around employing people with mental illness, whether they were with a chronic illness or one of the sort of high prevalence disorders. And in most cases, you will see and you will hear from people who experience mental health problems, their biggest recovery achievement is coming back to work. Biggest recovery achievement is coming back to work. And when I talk around mental health and people ask me, well, what is a good mental health system? Have you seen it anywhere? Has anybody got it? Well, I have to say, no, I haven't seen it anywhere. But the important aspects, the pillars, the four critical pillars of a good mental health system are these: access to good clinical care, access to good psychosocial supports, access to housing, and access to employment. Now, no one that I've seen anywhere around the world has that in any level that I think would say we have a great system. But they're the four pillars of a good mental health system. And again, employment plays an important part. So I'm linking that back to the workplace. But employment is such a critical part. It can both be a support around your mental health, but it can also have a negative impact on your mental health. So just think about in that sort of broad context. We have mainly, I think, in our mental health reform and this agenda we've been driving for at least 20, 30 years has really focused on the service delivery system. And some of the work I'm doing now is still trying to make sure that service delivery system responds to people that have the needs. And that's a critical aspect. So, you know, things like emergency departments and people getting in with the right support, drug and alcohol services, Bronwyn touched on, for example, the suicide rates. The suicide rates in this country for such an affluent society are some of the worst in the world. And what's that telling us? Why do we lose over 800 people just in Queensland last financial year to suicide? In fact, it's 804. For such an affluent society, when we look at the data and we unpack that, suicide seems to be the highest among sort of middle-aged men, linked to employment, linked to relationship problems, linked to, you know, fly-in, fly-out situations. There's a whole range of underlying factors which actually impact on that. Older men living in rural and remote communities, social isolation, lack of supports. When we look at the younger group, it's primarily our Indigenous younger people, but also younger people from LGBTI communities. So we've got some clear information where we can make a difference. But again, you know, there's some of the things that we've got to work really hard at, because the rates are just totally unacceptable. And, you know, again, we always tend to go back to government. We want more dollars to, you know, to be able to do a whole range of things. And I'll be the first to say I'm never going to say no to more dollars. But I'm really not sure that whether more dollars will make a difference. At the moment, if I look at the data, the investment in, for example, suicide or mental health, but I'll use in suicide over the last 10 years is like this, by all levels of government. But the rates are going like this. The question begs itself, what are we doing? Are we using that money to get the best buys? So I think there are some real fundamental challenges in what we're doing, how we're doing it, etc. And Bronwyn and I have had this discussion on many occasions. So I think we've got to think more broadly as a society. We know that we lose people, for example, at work, and even my time at aftercare, we lost one of our employees who actually took her own life. So these are the sorts of things that we're grappling with every day. But that's in that sort of treatment aspect. If I can move just you, sort of your thinking slightly around the population stuff, because treatment alone is not going to be the answer. And as I've used the analogy, we're never going to have enough ambulances to park at the bottom of the cliff. If we wait for people to fall off the cliff, we're never going to have enough ambulances. because we are a hospital-centric system. And you've got to be really ill before you get a service. If we don't start to build bridges at the, actually fences at the top of the cliff, but also support people so they don't even look for the cliff, that's where we should be heading with mental health in this society. So I think there's some of the challenges in the sort of the systems approach. If we take the more population sort of health approach, I think there's probably three or four key areas that we as the Commission are trying to shine a light on. One's about the early years. The evidence is really clear that if you can support a young child being born into a family in the first 1,000 days from the point of conception to year two, you're going to have a very different trajectory than if you don't provide any of that support, which we know now, and we can see that. The first 1,000 days are critical. And again, the first 1,000 days are critical, I'm talking about this, but think from an employer perspective. How do we support our employees in some way who also have a dual responsibility of being a mother and a father or a carer or whatever it is of young children? The investment that we make in those families in those early days produces the future citizens of our country here. Now, if you look at a child that grows up in a family which experiences 4 to 6 of these, what they call them, adverse childhood events, the ACEs risks. So things like, for example, drug and alcohol in the family, domestic violence, unstable housing, etc., etc. There's a whole list of these, about 12, I think, 13 of them. If a child is growing up in a family that has 4 to 6 of those, their trajectory's set. Not just mental health, but physical health as well. Poor mental health and physical health outcomes. A critical area for us to focus as a society around how do we support families and children, particularly children who are growing up in what I call trauma-saturated families for a whole range of reasons. A critical aspect. The second area, and I can come back to the second area in that population space, is around workplaces. And I'm not going to go too much into that. I think my colleagues here have covered that. But unless we really start to think about mental health in the workplace, how do we support people? How do we also create environments where people can thrive and survive? All those things are important in the workplace. And I'm certainly doing my best to try and shine a light and support a whole range of industries, a bit like Lendlease, Windsor and others, who are really focusing on the workplace. And that's where we need to have a major focus in terms of the future. And the last area in terms of the population stuff, not that there's a lot to do, we could have chosen 1,000 things, is older person's mental health. If you look at Australia as a country, when I compare to sort of looking at interstate but also more international experiences, we've got the bookends missing. Our whole system, that we, everything we do is focused on the adult. And to some degree, we've moved to youth with Headspace and a whole range of other services. But if you think about infant, child, perinatal mental health and older person's mental health, the two bookends, they're missing. We don't have a lot of focus on that. We don't have a lot of investment in those areas. So older person's mental health, but again, linked to employment. When people are getting to the end of their careers, how do we support people in that transition out? There's a whole range of sort of workplace implications for us, which I could talk to you for a long time about. But that transition out of employment into retirement, what happens after that? There's a whole range of things around our older Australians and the support that they need to be able to maintain good mental health. And finally, I think we as a society and trying to pick up what I've been trying to push all this week is around, yes, we can focus on the negatives and the numbers and the stats don't look that good, but how do we focus on staying well? What keeps us in staying well? What are the critical aspects? And so I think there's a whole range of, again, work in that space. And what can we do as a society to start to take some control around how do I maintain my wellness? Same as I try and maintain my physical wellness, how do I maintain my mental wellness? And I think that's a real challenge. And again, when you talk to a whole range of players, things like social connection are really critical. Having an opportunity to contribute, having purpose in life. All those things are really critical in terms of how do I feel about myself? Do I have hope for tomorrow? What's happening? So I think if you think about the system in those sort of ways, and again, suicide prevention sits in the population stuff. I spoke about it in the treatment stuff. If you think about mental health in that space, and workplace as one of those foundation areas where we can certainly make a difference, both in terms of, and I'm, when I talk about the workplace, I think workplaces have an opportunity to help people who have severe, complex mental illness, who are managing it as best as they can. Workplaces have a role to try and help these people enter or re-enter back into work. On the other end, we've also got the opportunity to make sure that we've got workplaces and work environments that support good mental health, that don't undermine good mental health. And so I think we've got a two-edged approach when it comes to the workforce and the workplace. So from where I sit as the commission, as I was going to say, none of this is really going to be easy. And I can see that, you know, we've made some shifts in the treatment space. But when you start talking about the population space, how do you move some of that money? How do you get new money to invest in that? And so I have to say, at least in the Queensland context, I'm really glad that the Queensland government is particularly taking a view around the early years. You know, they've got a strong focus on that. So I think we're starting to get some of that traction at that level, which I think is fantastic. But there's more to be done in that space to shift the system away from a reactive, illness-saturated treatment system, which we still need. We need beds, we need doctors, we need nurses, but we can't just put all our eggs in one basket. And so I think if we can start to shift the system towards much more of a population approach, where you as employers and employees play an important role, then I think we're going to make a difference. And I think if we're going to impact on these stats in any way, it'll take time, but I think if we start to shift the system more upstream, then we're more likely to be successful. I hope that helps, and that's probably as much as I wanted to say.
Thanks, Ivan. Just a couple of things that I'd like to draw from what Ivan's just spoken to us about, and that's when you talk about, you spoke about the early years and the importance in that space, and also this, the high prevalence of anxiety. Just this morning I saw on Twitter, and I am no queen of Twitter, I assure you, in such that I couldn't actually find it again in the taxi here to get the reference for you. However, there was some research that's just been released around anxiety in our young people, and it says that they are at the highest levels ever. And there was just over 30% of our 19 to 21-year-olds expressing severe levels of anxiety. They are the ones entering our workplaces. And that's really concerning, that our young people are under so much stress. The other thing that I particularly do wonder about and am concerned about in terms of workplace is the amount of focus on gender equality in terms of our staffing numbers. And whilst I agree that the best man and woman should have the position, and I understand the intention behind it, I do wonder about our middle-aged men who have grown up without a ceiling and all of a sudden there is one. And what is the impact of that on their mental health, and how, as we are in workplaces, are we supporting our women to rise as they should, but also supporting our men in an environment that they never grew up expecting to be in? And I think that's an interesting place for workplaces to be considering as well. But to pass over to another expert in workplace, as opposed to myself, may I introduce to you Patrice O'Brien. So Patrice is the General Manager of Workplace Partnerships and Engagement at Beyond Blue. Now Beyond Blue, you'll be aware of them, of course. They are an independent, not-for-profit organisation that provides information and support to help everyone in Australia achieve their best possible mental health. Patrice leads Beyond Blue's National Workplace Partnerships and Engagement Team. She drives activities to promote mentally healthy workplaces, and that she does that Australia-wide. So she has a very large role, and we're looking forward to hearing from you now. So please welcome Patrice.
Thank you, and like the previous speakers, a big thanks to Windsor Group for having us here today. And I'm starting to confirm what I expected before I came, that Dillis is a bit of a legend, because it feels like the messages that Jane and Ivan have shared have kind of set me up perfectly with what I wanted to talk to you about. So thank you for that. When Dillis asked me to come today, I thought that instead of talking about some of what we usually talk about, I might take you on a bit of a journey, as I see it, around what's happened in workplace mental health over the past few years. So that's what I really wanted to talk to you about today. And then if people have got sort of questions about more practical tips, I can answer some of those in the questions as well. But I just wanted to start by saying that for me, workplace mental health is vitally important. And I just wanted to get a sense from you around the room. Do you agree with that? Just a bit of a show of hands. Okay, that's a beautiful thing to see. So that is a really encouraging response. And as Ivan indicated, I'm not sure whether if we'd asked a group of leaders that question in years gone by, we would have seen the kind of response that we see now. So there has been a shift. I'm an eternal optimist, and there has been a shift in the focus on workplace mental health. But we're on a bit of a journey. I know it's an overused word, and I think we've got a long way to go. So you all probably have different reasons for why you think it is important. For some of you, workplace mental health might be important because you have a family member or a loved one who has a mental health condition and who's had a very good experience or a very bad experience in the workplace, and that shaped your perception. For some of you, it might be purely about legislative compliance and complying with health and safety requirements, and that's a good reason. And for some of you, it might be because you see creating a mentally healthy workplace as being the right thing to do for your staff and for society. And for some of you, it might be because you've realised the importance of a mentally healthy workplace and the business benefits in creating a thriving workplace with a positive culture, and that's why it's important to you. So similar to the level of importance that senior leaders now place on workplace mental health, the reasons why leaders see mentally healthy workplaces as important are changing as well. So Beyond Blue has been focusing on mentally healthy workplaces for a long time. Since early on in our journey, we were founded in 2000. We've had a workplace program since 2004. And at that time, Beyond Blue was one of the few organisations who was really talking a lot about workplace mental health. And for the most part, on the whole, workplaces were fairly unaware of the critical importance of mental wellbeing at work. In 2014, we launched our Heads Up initiative that Jane referred to, and we launched that with the support of the Mentally Healthy Workplace Alliance, which is made up of all of the organisations that you see there. And simply put, the Heads Up initiative has an audacious goal of encouraging all workplaces around Australia, no matter how big or small, to make psychological safety at work just as important as physical safety. The Heads Up initiative consists of a number of parts. So one of them is the website itself that some of you may be familiar with, and if not, I certainly encourage you to have a look. So the website contains an extensive range of free tools and resources, all designed to help workplaces and individuals within the workplace to improve mental health at work. The website is supported by a national engagement initiative, so we've got a small team of workplace engagement managers who travel around the country connecting with workplace stakeholders to promote our mental health resources and the importance of workplace mental health. And Heads Up is also supported by a marketing campaign, which we use to raise awareness of workplace mental health and to encourage behaviour change. When we first launched Heads Up, which was a bit over 4 years ago now, much of our messaging and the focus of our marketing campaign very much concentrated on why mentally healthy workplaces are so important. So we made the case for business leaders to invest time and resources into creating mentally healthy workplaces. And we promoted the human case and the legal and the compliance case and the business case and the opportunity to become an employer of choice. We found that after probably about 2 years of really getting that message out pretty strongly, a lot of our audience came back wanting something more. So the feedback we were getting from our audience was, okay, we've got it now. Workplace mental health is important. We hear you. We agree. But now tell us how to do it. So we then shifted some of our campaign messaging, and we had a focus on how workplaces could create more mentally healthy workplaces. And whilst this approach was effective for some of our audience, what our evaluation told us was that we missed a step for a number of our audience. So what we found after some of those campaigns was that 93% of business leaders believed in the importance of workplace mental health, And furthermore, most believe that they were addressing it effectively in their own workplace. However, when we looked further into their feedback on the actual actions that they were taking, it really belied this. Whilst believing that they were effectively addressing mental health at work, our evaluation found that only 31% of senior leaders exposed to our campaign had taken resultant actions in their workplace, and only 25% indicated that they were committed to developing a workplace mental health plan or strategy. And look, I think it's fair to say that workplace mental health is a relatively new concept, and it's understandable that it'll take time for business leaders and organisations to get used to it and to get used to what to do and to get the hang of it. So for us at Beyond Blue, this meant that we felt we'd done a good job on talking about why mentally healthy workplaces were important, and we'd made a start in talking about how to do it, but we'd missed a step, a critical step. We'd missed the what. What does a mentally healthy workplace actually look like? And this led to our latest campaign, which the name that I like to give it is that it's more than just a fruit bowl campaign. So a mentally healthy workplace is more than just a small number of discrete and separate actions. It really needs to be consolidated. So this latest campaign targeted workplace leaders with the 9 attributes of a mentally healthy workplace, which you can see up on the screen. And we used quite a novel approach to attract attention, where we sent mock job applications, and you can see an example there, out to real leadership and management positions that were advertised. And we let employers know through that about what the attributes of a mentally healthy workplace actually are. And we reminded them to look out for leaders who could bring these things to the workplace. The campaign has only recently finished and we're still awaiting the full evaluation, but the early results, anecdotal feedback and our website visits are very promising. So the reality for us with our messaging at Beyond Blue is that we need different messaging for the myriad of different workplaces and for the different levels of sophistication within workplaces regarding workplace mental health. While some workplaces still need to better understand the reasons for a focus on mental health at work, others appreciate its importance and are seeking implementation support. And then a small number, like Lendlease, have reached a phase of continuous improvement and are genuinely industry leading in the type of initiatives they're undertaking. What we've seen since the launch of Heads Up is that the focus on workplace mental health is changing. There's now a momentum behind mentally healthy workplaces which has never been seen before. So let me talk you through some of the things that we've observed as this is happening. Now this is, I was being very clever with this slide, but it's not going to work as well when I have to step across, so forgive me. So our former Prime Minister, the Honourable Malcolm Turnbull, when announcing the mental health reform back in November 2015, made a comment and he said, "And nothing diminishes the mental wealth of our nation, nothing diminishes the human capital of our nation and its capacity more than mental illness." Since then, at a federal government level, there's been a growing recognition of the importance of workplace mental health, no longer just as a nice to have, but as a national priority to improve participation and productivity. Our federal health minister, the Honourable Greg Hunt, has shown a keen interest in the health and economic benefits of mentally healthy workplaces. And as Ivan said, this interest is also evident in this week's announcement of the Productivity Commission's inquiry into mental health, which is a very promising development. Oh, that problem won't be a problem anymore. I'll just keep talking, it's okay. State and territory governments too are focusing on workplace mental health in a way that we've never seen before. So over the past 12 months, both the Victorian and the New South Wales governments have each invested over $50 million specifically on workplace mental health initiatives. And other states and territories also have significant activities, and there's a lot happening here in Queensland as well. And there are a range of other government stakeholders who are also showing great interest in this. So we're seeing increased activity from workplace health and safety regulators, from small business commissioners, and a range of government departments who are taking action to support their own staff. Don't panic, guys, if you can't get it up and running, it's fine. And the other thing that we're finding is that business leaders are starting to listen and to heed the call. And more business leaders across individual organisations and also peak industry bodies now recognise the importance of taking meaningful action. And only this morning I saw that the Chartered Accountants of Australia and New Zealand had put a press release out for World Mental Health Day, championing the role that they see that they and their members play in mental health. And I just thought, how fantastic. Again, in years gone by, it's not the kind of message we would have been seeing from Chartered Accountants. So it's a sign that things are changing. We're also seeing this change across commercial operators, with ever-growing numbers of training providers, conferences and consultancy firms offering services to businesses to enhance mental wellbeing at work, which is both a good thing, but it can also be a challenge and confusing for workplaces. And I'll touch on that a bit more. But as well as that almost sort of top-down approach, we're also seeing this groundswell that's meaning that workplaces can no longer ignore this. So workforce expectations are high in relation to mentally healthy workplaces. And in research commissioned by Beyond Blue back in 2014, it was found that a mentally healthy workplace is second only to pay in what employees are looking for when they're seeking a new job in the job market. And this is certainly true of the workforce of the future. So we know that millennials are looking for working environments where they can bring their values to work. Thank you. That's okay. I'll catch up. See, it was going to be a beautiful thing. So we know that millennials are looking for working environments where they can really bring themselves to work. Mission Australia's 2017 Youth Survey Report found that mental health is currently the number one issue for young Australians, in particular coping with stress. So for employers trying to attract young people, being a mentally healthy workplace is a really good way to go to get the best and brightest. We're hearing this from workplaces as well. So all over Australia, in all different industries, we hear of engagement surveys that are suggesting to employers that mental health is at the forefront of the minds of their staff. From big commercial professional services firms to professional sporting codes to small businesses, mental health is more and more at the forefront of employees' minds and something that they expect their employer to take action on. So there is now unprecedented support for workplace mental health action in Australia, and I believe that we're on the precipice of a major change. But what does all of that really mean? I believe that it means that the way we're collectively thinking about workplace mental health is fundamentally changing to what we've seen in the past. Where we once might only have considered psychological safety at work in terms of how we could meet our regulatory compliance, we're now seeing it as a way to go far beyond the benefits of mere compliance. Where we may have previously considered workplace mental health as supporting only those who are unwell, many now recognise that mentally healthy workplaces are for everyone. Mental health is not a static state. This slide shows how mental health exists on a continuum, and all of us can travel along that continuum depending on what's occurring in our lives and the state of our health at any point in time. It's now being recognised that mentally healthy workplaces are not only important to those who might be in the red zone, but they're also incredibly important for those moving into the yellow or the orange zone. A mentally healthy workplace is one where if there is something happening for an individual, they themselves or their colleagues have the mental health literacy to know that something's going on, and their workplace knows how to support them at that point in time and to seek the right support early. A mentally healthy workplace is one that also keeps as many as possible of its employees in the green zone, where people can be their best and can thrive at work. We don't have safe workplaces just to keep people safe who have already got a physical injury. It's exactly the same with mental health. We want everyone to be able to be their best at work. And this is quite different from previous messages, which spoke primarily about having compassion for those who are sick or vulnerable in the workplace. There's now been a shift from focusing on employees, on only employees with mental health conditions, towards this broader view on protecting all employees' mental health and considering the opportunities workplaces have in supporting positive mental health to capitalise on employee productivity and engagement. It's been seen that investing in wellbeing is now a strategic priority, and the return on investment beyond the avoidance associated with claims, absenteeism and presenteeism. The real return on investment for organisations lies in a mentally healthy workforce that operates at a level of sustainable high performance. As I mentioned earlier, this shift has now never been more evident than by the announcement of that Productivity Commission inquiry. But where is all of this going, and where is it going to take us? So this increased focus on workplace mental health has actually had an unintended consequence for some employers, and some of you in the room, this may resonate with you. The plethora of information now available, some really evidence-based and some maybe not so much, has left some employers confused about which information to follow, which conference to attend, which model to apply to their own workforce. And there's a need for a uniform framework endorsed by government, regulators, business, unions, and the mental health sector that provides employers with consistent, simple, trusted advice and implementation support to every Australian workplace. And working on such a national workplace initiative that will detail what works and provide clear, step-by-step processes for taking action and hands-on implementation support is now the key strategic priority of Beyond Blue and the Mentally Healthy Workplace Alliance that I mentioned earlier. So it's something we're very much working on. And this proposed national workplace initiative is needed now and will be needed even more in the future. The nature of work continues to change, and working conditions of the future are likely to bring a new set of challenges. We sit on the precipice of greater change, the rise of digital technologies, increasing screen time and sedentary work, and the associated rise of chronic illness, our ageing population and the impact on workplaces, the rise of stress for Australian workers, and the changing nature of work with the emergence of the gig economy. All of these new paradigms will challenge us in different ways, and it's critical that we have a framework to address mental health at work in order to prepare us for these emerging and new challenges. There's one thing that I do know for sure, and it's this. No matter what your reason for believing that mentally healthy workplaces are important for the economy, for the benefit of your organisation's bottom line, for your potential to be an employer of choice, there is no more important reason than this. Mental health conditions are prevalent in Australia. 45% of us will have experienced a mental health condition in our lifetime. And still now today, not enough of us are seeking help early enough, less than half. The most tragic outcome of this is suicide. 8 Australians every single day take their own lives. For everyone who loses their life to suicide, there's another 30 who attempt. That's approximately 240 people every day in Australia who feel so despondent and so desperate that they get to the point of considering taking their own life. These numbers are shocking, they're a national crisis, and we need to do all that we can to change them. And I believe that workplaces have an incredible role to play. Not to become clinical settings where people within the workplace have to diagnose or provide counselling, definitely not. But to become places where everyone is supported to be themselves at work and to be their best. Places where people know that it's okay to speak up if something's wrong, if they're struggling, and where they won't be met with stigma or discrimination. Where they know that when speaking up, they'll be met with care, respect, and concern. They'll be supported to stay at or return to work, and they'll be pointed in the right direction for the right support at the right time. Imagine an Australia where every workplace could provide that for their staff. Workplaces could play the most incredible role in reducing that horrendous number, and nothing could be more important than that. So regardless of all of the changes that have been and all of the changes that will come, let's get back to my first question. Are mentally healthy workplaces vitally important? Unequivocally, yes. Few things today could be more important. Thank you.